You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 19th of March 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Once again, we've reached the end of another week. The weekend is almost here and you know what that means. It means we have Grandpa Dan with us today. Grandpa, how you doing? It's a beautiful day here. What's it like over there in Texas?
It's cool, a little breezy. It's all right. I'm just rocking along like usual, living on coffee and about 5 hours of sleep. I was sitting here contemplating the fact that we do this stupid time change twice a year here in the U.S. And I think this is like the government, like a government fantasy. They do this time change because there's no actual justification for it. I think it's like their fantasy. They live out their fantasy that they actually control time itself by bouncing the clocks back and forth and making us all go along with it.
Well, it totally caught me out this week, actually. I'm normally prepared for it because the clocks change in America a few weeks before they actually change in Britain. And I'm usually aware of it because we follow the American time on the radio server. But it caught me out on Monday. Hopefully I'm used to it now and it won't catch me out again because we've still got another couple of weeks to go before they actually change in Britain. And we're going to be talking about a country today. I don't think it actually has clock changes. I don't really think the concept of time is properly understood in some parts of the continent. We're actually going to be talking about a country in Africa today, and we're going to be talking about it because it had a nationalist president, a very colourful president, actually. He was quite entertaining on the world stage, and he was very, very well loved by his people. I'm talking about President John Magufuli, and it's not MAGA as in Make America Great Again, it's Magufuli. And unfortunately, he passed away yesterday. And I just thought what we could do is we could have a look at the way this has been reported, first off in The Guardian, then in Africa News, and then we'll actually have a look at his achievements, because he was a good man, and he looked like he was really doing his best for his Tanzanian people. And I think him actually dying like this could well be suspicious. First off, we'll have a look at the Guardian report. Tanzania's President John Magufuli, one of Africa's most prominent COVID-19 deniers, has died after a two-week absence from public life that prompted speculation that he had contracted the disease. Magufuli's death was announced on Wednesday by the country's Vice President Samia Suluhu, who said the president died of heart failure. He was 61. Magufuli, a divisive figure who won a second term in October in an election marred by violence and allegations of fraud, had not been seen in public since 27th of February, leading many to believe that he was sick and possibly incapacitated. He had a history of heart problems and he wore a pacemaker. Government officials had insisted Magufuli was working normally and that citizens should ignore hateful rumours coming from abroad. Police arrested four people since last week on charges of spreading false information about the health of political leaders. Interesting, isn't it, the way that they criticise these things happening in Africa? They say the election was marred by violence and allegations of fraud. Did we not have that in America? They say police are arresting people on charges of spreading false information about the health of political leaders. Aren't we censoring people for talking about health here and for bringing up alternative explanations for COVID-19? And the suspicious thing about this is that he was what they call a COVID-19 denier, and he is now dead. And the person that has actually taken over is this vice president, Samia Suluhu, who is the first female president of Tanzania, and she also happened to work for an NGO before she became his vice president, and she also worked for the UN. So Tanzania has gone from a nationalist president that was a COVID-19 denier, and as we will see, did lots of good for his country, and straight away, as soon as he is gone, they now have a feminist president who works for the UN and probably for the World Bank. I mean, she works for these NGOs. There's probably some connection to the World Bank there somewhere. What do you make of this, Grandpa, anyway? Had you heard of him before, John Magufuli?
No, I'm flying totally by the seat of my pants, but I can tell already after reading our notes here and trying to get up to speed as quickly as I could this morning, John Magufuli is totally based. I mean, he's very based. He won his election overwhelmingly. And of course, you know, there's more evidence. You were talking about this looks suspicious, and I totally agree. There's more evidence that John Magufuli was offed by the West than there's evidence that this opposition leader that nobody cared about in Russia was attempted assassinated by Putin. Of course, with the democracy and our values, this guy who won overwhelming support from his people, we'll get into the article where his people loved him and everything, that's a divisive figure according to the democracy. You see, for true democracy, you get rid of the guy that everybody voted for, that the people really liked, and you install this person who has all the correct globalist regime credentials. And I love that they threw the and you pointed out they threw the allegations of fraud. The only allegations of fraud were all coming from the West. The people in Tanzania weren't running around complaining about allegations of fraud. That was all coming from the U.S. and from the West, with absolutely, by the way, no evidence. Once again, we have far more evidence of election fraud in the U.S. in this past election than there were any signs, any evidence of election fraud in Tanzania, yet they're talking about all this allegations of fraud, unsubstantiated. Why doesn't the media use their favorite term, without proof, without evidence, like they did with Trump? It's just all, I don't know, the doublespeak just becomes to the point. It's so absurd and over the top. It's just, I don't know. It's breathtaking, to be honest. But yeah, he was a divisive figure because he was loved by his people. We have the democracy. So this guy dies and they install this woman that has all the oligarchy credentials. She worked at the UN. She's part of the UN. She's part of an NGO. All of the things you would look for. And then allegations of fraud when there were absolutely no evidence of any actual fraud. In fact, they probably tried to fraud it the other way, and the Tanzanians cracked down on it and didn't allow them to do that.
You know, at this time as well, Twitter were censoring news organizations in America, and it was just before they censored Donald Trump, and they were complaining that in Tanzania they themselves had been censored. I think they removed Facebook as well. They said, we don't want Facebook and Twitter interference in this election, so we're actually going to shut down the social media networks. Well, let's have a look at the way this was reported in Africa News. And that's an arm of the globalists, basically. But at least it tells us a little bit more about how the Africans responded to this. The head of state died Wednesday, aged 61, from a heart condition, his vice president said, after more than 5 years of divisive authoritarian rule, capped by his refusal to take COVID-19 seriously. Authorities have cracked down on free speech, leaving many fearful to comment on his health and death. The president's supporters mourned his death and the uncertain political road ahead. Innocent Tianoki, a local street vendor, is heartbroken. I feel very sad and I am suffering because we had our leader, our president, whom we loved, and he loved us, the poor. We learnt the news with deep shock, the death of our beloved president, John Pombe Magufuli. His industry mate, Hassan Saeed, echoed a similar sentiment as he wonders what will become of those within his financial demographic. He was the president of the less privileged. We voted for him, and now that he has left us who voted for him, our hearts are in deep pain. And I think this is probably more like the way that this is being taken in Tanzania. They seem to be very, very upset at this, and he did have masses of support, and he really was doing a lot for the poor, basically, in Tanzania. You have a lot of very rich people, and you have a lot of poor people, and he genuinely seemed to care about his people. Elsewhere, the United States State Department expressed condolences by adding, "We hope that Tanzania can move forwards on a democratic and prosperous path." I mean, to me, It sounds like they left out the word now. We hope that Tanzania can move forward now on a democratic and prosperous path, as if they're saying, well, that's good. Now he's gone. We can get back to business as usual, raping the country and exporting all the minerals away and crushing the poor and putting the banks in there and getting lots of loans. That's the way that it seems to me. They don't seem to be actually expressing proper condolences there, that they're implying that Tanzania wasn't on a democratic and prosperous path with this president who supported his people, who managed to get lots of votes. I mean, what are they saying by democracy? Did he manufacture the votes in some way? Did he have a postal vote system going there? I don't think he did. He won the election legitimately, and Tanzania had been increasing in wealth up until now that they've actually got rid of him. What do you make of the African reporting of this, Grandpa?
Well, for somebody who's divisive and authoritarian and apparently an all-around evil thinker, it sounds like his people loved him. I mean, it comes out of the same deal. They open up with all of these negative terms about the man, but then it turns out the people themselves love him, like you say, because, well, what did he do? He cracked down on the corruption. He cracked down on the not letting the oligarchs strip mine the country, rip them off for their minerals and their gold mining and things such as that. And then they have the nerve to talk about he cracked down on free speech. You know, and because what? He shut down Twitter and Facebook and didn't allow them in the country. Twitter and Facebook are the biggest, you know, deniers of free speech on the planet, not just in the U.S., on the entire planet. Facebook and Twitter, these big social media companies, they are the arbitrators of free speech, that you're not allowed to say what they do not approve of. Then when he bans them from the country, which proves that this guy is actually more on the ball than many bigger countries that are, you know, in opposition to the oligarchy that still haven't seemed to come to grips with, you got to turn that shit off. You got to turn this Twitter and Facebook off, because it's just works with the U.S. State Department. It's part of how the U.S. intelligence agencies foment these color revolutions and manufacture this outrage and try to get people on the streets in opposition to the government. He was based. I mean, he saw what was going on. He cracked down the corruption. He stopped strip mining of the country. He did all of these positive things. They demonize him, but yet when they talk to the people on the street, you know, if they found people on the street that had a negative view of the guy, they would have had that front and center. So they pretty much couldn't find anybody that had a negative view of the guy as far as actual Tanzanians that live there. They all love them. They literally feel heartbroken because their leader has died. But yet, you know, he did these things in opposition to the regime. And conveniently now, because they can move forward now in the democracy, which means now they have a leader that nobody voted for, that is part of the UN and has worked for an NGO. See, that's part of the democracy and our value. I just find it amazing, though, that they have the nerve to talk about he cracked down on free speech. And basically, it comes down to because he shut off Twitter and Facebook, who has just basically cracked down on everybody's free speech in the West.
You know, he probably took that vice president on as you know, some kind of gift to the West, saying, I'll take on this woman as a vice president. And you never thought that she would actually be put in power, because it doesn't look like she's going to continue with any of his programs. Well, let's have a look at what he actually did for Tanzania. We'll start with corruption. After taking office, Magufuli immediately began to impose measures to curb government spending, such as barring unnecessary foreign travel by government officials, shrinking the delegation for a tour of the Commonwealth from 50 people to 4, dropping its sponsorship of a World AIDS Day exhibition in favour of purchasing AIDS medication, and discouraging lavish events and parties by public institutions. Magufuli reduced his own salary from $15,000 a month to $4,000 a month. Magufuli suspended the country's Independence Day festivities for 2015 in favour of a national clean-up campaign to help reduce the spread of cholera. He personally participated in the clean-up efforts, having stated that it was so shameful that we are spending huge amounts of money to celebrate 54 years of independence when our people are dying of cholera. The savings were to be invested in improving hospitals and sanitation throughout the country. Now, how many world leaders are willing to take a reduction in salary like that? I mean, he's basically reduced his salary by two-thirds to say that he doesn't need that much money, and he wants to be more like the people that he's actually governing. And to say, well, we're not going to have this tour of the Commonwealth. We don't need to do that. We don't need to have all these exhibitions. What we need to concentrate on is cleaning up the country and improving the health of the people. I mean, this is a genuine leader. This is what leaders should be like. And we're told he was divisive. I mean, what do you think of the example that he is setting here, Grandpa?
Yeah, this is what an actual, you know, literal Black Lives Matter attitude would look like. I mean, we're talking about an African country here, so we're talking about blacks. This is what an actual Black Lives Matter attitude looks like. He actually was taking steps to try to better the lives of his people. And it's admirable. I mean, we were talking before the show, and you were saying that, you know, we don't want to in any way come off like we're making fun of this guy. Because, I mean, I think the guy's admirable. The policies he undertook were admirable. And cracking down on corruption, that means cutting out the oligarchs. Because what happens is these people, these government officials, quote unquote, take these trips, and you wind up with money exchanging hands, and then they get on the payroll of these international corporations, these globalist corporations, and down the line that enables them to, and I know we'll get into it here in a minute, but you know, they can strip mine the country for resources. You know, they pay them pennies on the dollar for the things they should be able to increase the wealth of the country and thus the wealth of the people with. Instead, you get a few people bribed off, and the globalist corporations make out like bandits. This guy cracked down on all of this, all of the backdoor deals, all of the way they can, you know, slip around and have plausible deniability while taking dirty money. This guy was doing an actual, you know, really, really good job. And I do. I think it's very admirable.
And it's suspicious that he's gone, to be honest. In January 2018, Magufuli issued a directive ordering the suspension of registration for foreign merchant ships following recent incidents surrounding the seizure of overseas shipments of illegal goods, particularly drugs and weapons that were being transported under the flag. So what was happening there is, due to this corruption, There were ships that were going out to sea underneath the Tanzanian flag, and they were basically just transporting drugs and weapons around the world. So his country was being used by these worldwide drugs gangs and gangsters, and he put a stop to that. So he wasn't just putting a stop to the legal oligarchy; he was also putting a stop to the illegal oligarchy, and in a big way as well. Not going after street dealers, but going after the people that are actually smuggling these things, drugs and weapons all around Africa. And I'm sure he must have really, really stepped on a few toes doing that. Do you want to comment on what he did here with the suspending of the registration of the foreign merchant ships, Grandpa?
Well, yeah, because the CIA is the biggest drug cartel in the world. I mean, let's just call this for what it is. When he cracked down on the shipping out of drugs from Tanzania, he was stepping in the CIA's one of their money flows. We can't forget the first thing that happened when the U.S. invaded Afghanistan was they put troops out there to guard the poppy fields because the Taliban would burn the poppy fields, which cut into the drug shipments that were going into Europe and the U.S. I mean, that is just, yeah, you know, I mean, that is just reality. Anybody that pays any attention knows this. So you can look at this and say, well, he stepped on a few toes with the drug dealers and the drug cartels, but in reality, he was stepping on the toes of Western intelligence that makes a lot of dirty money through these drug shipments and weapons shipment. Where did the weapons come from? How did they, you know, where did they originate from? We know how all of this works. So when he cracked down on these drugs and weapons shipping out of the country, he was actually, again, stepping on the toes of the Western establishment, the oligarchy and these intelligence agencies. And the more you get into this and the more you look at what this man was doing, the more suspicious his untimely death appears to be.
Well, next up, we'll have a look at his nationalization of the mining industry. The country has amended the laws governing the awarding of mining contracts, giving itself the right to renegotiate or terminate them in the event of proven fraud. The new legislation also removes the right of mining companies to resort to international arbitration. The tax dispute with Acacia Mining, accused of having significantly undervalued its gold production for years, finally resulted in an agreement. Tanzania obtained 16% of the shares in the mines that were held by the multinational. I mean, that's pretty, that's massive, that is. They're saying you can't go to the World Bank, you can't go to the international court, you have to come to the Tanzanian court. So if you're going to rip the Tanzanians off, we're going to get you. You're not going to be able to get away with it. You're not going to be able to go to the UN. You have to come to us. And he's saying that they're going to be awarding the mining contracts as well. So he's basically nationalised the whole of mining there. I mean, this is the sort of thing that that gives white people a bad name, really, in Africa, is the way that these countries have been ripped off by these big corporations. So he hasn't just upset the CIA, he's also gone after these miners. I think how long they've actually been ripping them off for with the gold production, and he managed to stand up to them and get this sorted. What do you think of his nationalization of the mining industry?
Yeah, and I mean, whether it's the CIA or these multinational corporations, I mean, these things are all, you know, they're all kind of one and the same in a way. I mean, they're all interconnected. I mean, the oligarchy, the international corporate, you know, the multinational corporations, the intelligence agencies, these are not separate entities working on their own interests. They're all kind of basically part of the collective. And yeah, I mean, he's got 16% of the share in the mines held by this multinational corporation, and it's their mines. I mean, seriously, it's their mines. It's in their countries. What were they getting before? I mean, now they're getting 16%, which is good, but I mean, it's not a huge amount. So what were they getting before? Basically, they were getting pennies on the dollar. You know, they sit here and say, you know, look back and it's like, oh my gosh, they would rip off the Indians by giving them beads and trinkets in exchange for, you know, these things of much greater value, or, you know, talk about the African slave trade, and the slave traders would go over there and give these chiefs, you know, beads and trinkets in exchange for slaves and such. And yet here we are. Fast forward today, and multinational corporations are essentially giving them beads and trinkets in exchange for their gold mines. And this guy tried to put an end to that. He cracked down and said, no, you're not going to be able to go to these international courts, the World Bank, the UN, because we know it's a rigged system. No, you have to go through our courts, which is only fair because it's their country, it's their gold mines, it's their resources. And they've been getting, you know, the previous corrupt administrations were taking beads and trinkets in exchange for gold. So, yeah, I mean, it's just mind-boggling that this guy should be celebrated. You know, this guy should be celebrated. You want to talk about black liberation and pro-black, and like I said, Black Lives Matter. This guy was doing more tangible things in that regard than all of this nonsense that is being promoted now in the West today.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter should have really been supporting him and trying to draw attention to him. The actual traitors in the country itself in Tanzania have been complaining about the fact that these mining companies now have to go under Tanzanian law, and they're saying, oh, these mining companies won't come here now that they have to face Tanzanian justice. Well, damn right they should be facing Tanzanian justice. They're not, you know, the Tanzanians aren't going to get it anywhere else, are they? Next up, we'll have a look at the economy. With one of the highest economic growth rates on the African continent, 5.8% in 2018, an estimated 6% for 2019, according to the International Monetary Fund. The Tanzanian government is embarking on a vast program of infrastructure development, particularly rail infrastructure. Magufuli actually received the nickname the Bulldozer in reference to his roadworks projects. But the term is also used about his moves to reduce spending and corruption within the government. Following Magufuli's initial rounds of cuts post-inauguration, the hashtag #WhatWouldMagufuliDo was used by Twitter users to demonstrate their own austerity measures inspired by the president. Now, that's how a president should be. He should inspire the population. He should set a really good example. This is what was expected of the king in European countries. He was expected to set a really good example. He was expected to be as moral as possible so that the people would follow him. And you've got the same situation here. And you can see that it has worked. One of the highest economic growth rates on the African continent. And he's embarked on this vast program of infrastructure development. This is the way you do things. We need to be electing people that set a good example, not people like Boris Johnson. How many wives has he had? How many children has he had? When did he ever accept a pay cut, accept a two-thirds salary pay cut to demonstrate austerity? We had all these austerity measures in Britain, and not once did we see any of the politicians going through this austerity themselves. So you can see here that when you have a nationalist economy, you get a growth rate. And this is Africans that are showing us how they're doing this. You imagine how much better white countries would be if we had nationalist economies. I mean, he's proud of this 5.8% there, 6%. I mean, we would have 10%, 20% if we had nationalist-based economy. What would you make of his ideas here of improving the infrastructure, Grandpa?
Don't forget the African continent. How many? All of our countries in the West would kill for 6% economic growth, real economic growth. And what does he do? Instead of pocketing the money or funneling it to multinational corporations, he's turning around and investing it in the people to make their lives better, to improve the infrastructure. Meanwhile, in the West, where we've had full freedom and democracy and our values for decades now, we've got crumbling infrastructure. Our economies are collapsing because of the doom flu lockdowns in the name of the deadly virus. And this guy instead has worked tirelessly, before he just so happened to handily turn up dead. He was working tirelessly to better the lives of his people. I would take Magufuli there as a replacement leader if he were still alive. If they as much as we get accused of white supremacy and evil racism, if you gave me a choice, you can have our current system in the U.S. or you could be ruled by this guy if he were still alive. I would take this guy. I would say, let's give this guy a chance because I think things would be better. Yeah, he did absolutely was doing amazing things. And that's why now he's magically gone. And they're going to get to, quote unquote, move forward with the democracy. They're going to get to move forward with our values. And we all know what that entails. 6%, really 6% economic growth. That is nothing to sneeze at. That is an amazing figure, especially for Africa. But I mean, worldwide, that is a real amazing figure. And as you pointed out, Sven, it shows that, you know, nationalist policies, when you have somebody that cuts down the corruption and actually tries to better the lives of his people, amazing things happen. 6% growth, that is amazing. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., we have huge unemployment. They try to pump up that our economy is growing and doing well, but that's just Wall Street. If you take the fact that they factor Wall Street into that, our economy is an absolute mess. The real lives of the people have been stagnant and going downhill. The standard of living has been stagnant and going downhill for decades now. And all that is papered over with fake statistics. This guy managed a 6% economic growth in Africa. And that's something any of us would love to see in our own countries.
And they run him down and they say he's divisive. I mean, I'm getting these figures from Wikipedia as well. So if they could find some way to massage them, to make him sound bad, you know they would. They try to next when they talk about censorship. Magufuli's government was accused of repressing opposition to his leadership, including laws restricting opposition rallies, the suspension of the Swahili language Mawio newspaper in 2016 for publishing false and inflammatory reporting regarding the nullification of election results in Zanzibar, threatening to shut down radio and television stations that do not pay their license fees, and a 2018 bill requiring blogs and other forms of online content providers to hold government licenses with content restrictions. So all they can find to attack him on here is that he tries to make people that are supposed to pay for a license pay for a license. And then you have the pot calling the kettle black here when he tries to shut down a newspaper for publishing false and inflammatory reporting regarding the election results. And of course, you know that false and inflammatory reporting will have been sponsored by the banks, by the multicultural organizations. What do you make of their accusations of censorship here, Grandpa?
Oh, yeah. You just hit the nail on the head. I mean, they talk about repressing opposition from foreign leadership, but we already know he was very overwhelmingly loved by his people. So what was the opposition coming from? It was all being instigated by foreign actors. I mean, for all we hear constantly in the U.S. about Russian meddling and, you know, just depending on the narrative, it's either Russian meddling or if you're a normie con, you get those evil chinks. They own our government. It's not some other foreign entity that owns our government. But this guy, you know, I mean, the only actual opposition to him was basically foreign sponsored. So when he cracked down on all of those things, he was shutting down the foreign interference and meddling in their system, which any sane government would do. I mean, it's amazing to me that you have countries, you know, that are, have intelligent leaders such as Russia, and they still are like dragging their feet and hesitant to shut down Twitter and Facebook. And they know it's working hand in hand with foreign intelligence agencies. And this guy, he had the fortitude to go ahead and you know, clamp down, shut that shit off, so they couldn't be doing that. All of this newspaper, radio, and television stations, he's using these as excuse to narrow down entities that they know are being utilized by foreign actors to undermine their administration, to undermine what the positive steps that his government was doing.
He also stood up for old style traditional Christianity as far as heterosexual relationships are concerned. People convicted of same-sex liaisons in Tanzania can be jailed for up to 30 years. In October 2016, the government banned HIV/AIDS outreach projects and closed US-funded programs that provide HIV testing, condoms, and medical care to the gay community. The countrywide closure of private HIV clinics began soon afterwards. In late 2018, Magufuli initiated a nationwide crackdown, threatening to arrest and deport anyone campaigning for gay rights and making it difficult to find a lawyer who will defend cases of violence against LGBTQ people. Paul Makonda, Magufuli's regional commissioner for Dar es Salaam, announced in 2018 that a committee of 17 members, consisting of police, lawyers, and doctors, had been formed to identify homosexuals. Within one day of the announcement, authorities reportedly received 5,763 messages from the public, with more than 100 names. Hamish Kigwangala, the country's deputy health minister, said he supports the use of anal exams to prove whether someone is having gay sex. The test is widely considered to be a violation of human rights by medical experts. Well, it does look like it's actually having the desired effect. If the Tanzanian people vote for this man and they vote that they don't want to have homosexuality promoted in their country, then who are we to interfere and say that he is wrong to do that? Surely that is a sovereign decision. And it does look like they don't really have that much of a problem with it. Because, I mean, 100 names out of the country, I don't know how many millions of people there actually are, but there was only 100 names that were sent to them saying, well, these people we know are homosexual. And quite clearly, they want to protect the rest of the population from them. I mean, that's the way that they see it. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, but that's the way that they see it. And it should be up to them if they want to have these laws. They're only the same laws that we ourselves had for the last 2,000 years, probably longer than that. What do you make of his position on gay rights here, Grandpa?
Well, he was cracking down on subversion of their society, on the morals of the people, but also, again, foreign interference. He closed U.S.-funded programs that provide HIV testing. Does anybody really believe that the U.S. government gives a shit about how many people have HIV in Tanzania? They do not. Again, these are all front deals to where they can get in there. They meddle. We look at these color revolutions around the world, that we know are sponsored by NGOs / U.S. intelligence agencies. And who do they always stir up? Homosexuals, women. I mean, it's always these same groups. So by cracking down on this, cracking down on these foreign groups coming in the name of quote unquote HIV testing, again, he's booting out these foreign meddlers that are there for no other purpose. No other purpose than to undermine what the government is trying to do. These are not disconnected. You can read this and go, well, he was cracking down on the homosexuals. Well, that's all fine and dandy. But this is not an isolated thing from what we talked about earlier, where he's getting more fair mining, you know, more fair monetary compensation for their resources. And these are all interrelated. These things are used by these multinational, by the oligarchy. I mean, these are the things used to where they go in, they stir these groups up, and then they foment a color revolution. All of a sudden, they have all of these problems. All these protests magically appear on the street. Well, how did the people organize? How did the people come together? Especially now that he had turned off Twitter and Facebook, so they couldn't use that method. Well, they come in the name of these, you know, oh, we're just here to test people for HIV. And then they get the homosexuals all together and say, you know, you could be having, you know, even more democracy and freedom which more homosexuality, I don't know, doing gay stuff in the streets or whatever, and however the tactics they use to stir these people up and to undermine the nationalist government in order to usher in the global homo agenda. We see this time and time again. This guy was taking step by step by step to cut off this foreign interference in this country. And what do we get as a result? Got 6% economic growth. The people loved him. They were investing in infrastructure instead of going into debt to the World Bank so that they would be debt slaves like everybody else is. And I love that he put together this this member, the police, lawyers, doctors. Well, these sound like experts to me, and we're always told we got to do whatever the experts tell us. Apparently, it's only some experts.
Well, that's a good point that you raise there, that all of this is linked together, because this is what they mean by democracy, isn't it? This is what they mean by liberal democracy. You're not supposed to notice all the wealth that's being siphoned out of the country and the fact that you're being paid, I don't know, 1960 prices on your gold. You're supposed to just be living it up at the gay disco, aren't you? That's why they promote all this degeneracy, while at the same time taking the money out of the country. And the deal that they have with the left is, don't criticize our policies, don't criticize the banks, and we'll allow you to have all the degeneracy you want, all the transsexualism you want, all the gay discos that you want. And he did get away with all of this. And then last year, I think it really was the straw that broke the camel's back when COVID-19 came into Tanzania. Magufuli instructed his security forces to blindly test coronavirus PCR test kits for quality on goats, papaya, sheep, and motor oil. All of them, he said, had been found to be positive for COVID-19. The last official data that we have on the coronavirus in Tanzania was published in late April last year. Magufuli had dismissed the head of the National Laboratory and the distribution of non-governmental information on the spread of the virus had become a crime. Well, that is the same here, isn't it? They've banned the distribution of non-governmental information on the virus. He disputed the effectiveness of face masks and testing. By May 2020, Magufuli and Dar es Salaam Regional Commissioner Paul Makonda announced that the disease had been defeated in the country by national prayer, and they called for a public celebration. The corona disease has been eliminated, thanks to God, Magufuli told the church congregation in Dodoma, the country's capital. The World Health Organization has questioned the government's approach to COVID-19. Now, we may laugh at that and say, yeah, well, you know, they prayed and it's gone away, but has it really gone away? But if you actually look at the population in Tanzania, 45% of them are under the age of 15. 45%. I doubt there is very many of them at all that are over the age of 60. And don't forget that the coronavirus really does only affect people that are over the age of 60. It was something like 360 people died of coronavirus last year in Britain that were under the age of 60. So if you think half the population of Tanzania is under the age of 15, why should he be bothered about this virus? The maximum number of people that it could possibly kill in Tanzania is, I don't know, a tenth of a percent, a hundredth of a percent, something like that. I mean, he really, I think he was quite right not to really be bothered about this. But this really, really did upset the globalists and the oligarchs, I think. And unfortunately, he is no longer with us. Grandpa, what are your final thoughts on John Magufuli?
He showed us the way. You stop the testing. He proved, scientifically, he proved that the tests are bullshit. Pardon my French, but he proved the tests were BS. So he stopped the testing. And guess what? COVID went away. Nobody, I mean, if this was, you were talking about, we could sit here and laugh at it. I don't laugh at it at all. He's sitting there. He says, okay, yeah, we ended it with national prayer. They ended it by cutting off the tests. You quit the tests. If this was ridiculous and absurd, as they would have you believe, then everybody in Tanzania would have been, well, that's ridiculous and absurd, because everyone around me is bodies are piling up in the street. People are dropping dead from the COVID. How can he say that COVID has been gotten rid of? It's less absurd to say that it was cured by national prayer is less absurd than the fact that I see on the news here in the U.S. this morning, they said the flu has disappeared. They admitted the flu has disappeared this flu season, and it's because people are wearing masks and washing their hands. You see, it's because they replaced all the flu data with COVID data. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. He ended the testing and magically COVID went away. There weren't people dying all over left and right, or his own people would have been like, he was a fool. Look at all the people that I know. They're dying of COVID. But that didn't happen. He proved their PCR tests were a bunch of, to use Joe Biden's term, malarkey. It was a bunch of malarkey. They discontinued the testing, and lo and behold, just like magic, COVID-19 in their country went away. And now, lo and behold, like magic, he's no longer in the way, and we're getting a NGO-sponsored, UN card-carrying member, globalist, oligarch-approved, non-elected candidate, or rather president for Tanzania. We see it time and time. Anytime people stand up for their own people, and they're going to be by nature in opposition to the global oligarchy. And we see the same outcome over and over again. If Black Lives Matter meant a thing, they would be celebrating this guy, but it doesn't. It's just another tool used to batter and destroy and push the agenda of the globalist oligarchy, the globo homo agenda. This guy did great things for his country, and it is a great loss for the Tanzanians.
Yeah, we always have to pay tribute to nationalists. It doesn't matter what race they come from, what people they come from. Any good nationalist leader that does his best for his people, we have to honour them and pay tribute to them. And just one final thought here. I do wonder if Tanzania is one of the few countries in the world, like Belarus and Syria, that still do actually have some flu victims this year. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.